Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, September the 17th. And as we like to do from time to time, we'll be chatting with our great friend, Leslie Eastman. Leslie, known to many of you as a contributor to Legal Insurrection, and of course, to most of us, she's known as a great friend of our show and is a very charming lady who always has a very good political opinion that we like to hear. Today we're going to talk about these fires in California, 2020 in general. I'm sure Leslie will have something else to say beyond that. So let me say hello to Leslie Eastman. Leslie, welcome. It's always a treat to have you.
Yeah, happy Thursday, Silvio. It's good to be chatting with you once again. And I'm hoping as we continue on through the general election season to be on the spot more frequently because, of course, there is a lot of news and a lot of drama, and people need to be especially well-informed, I think, as we head to November 3rd this year.
Absolutely. This is a very important election in more ways than one. So, yes, you're right. You're always welcome, and you can come as many times as you like on the show. We love having you. But I do want to begin with a couple of little side stories, just as we always like to do on this day in history. The first one is that it was on this day in 1787 that the actual final Constitution, because that didn't get ratified until later when it went to the states. But the product that was sent to the states was approved today in 1787, and then, of course, it was submitted to the states for ratification. So we say happy number, that would be 233, whatever, however you say that, but 233 years. I think the Constitution has run rather well, Leslie.
Though I would imagine that we are going to get some serious challenges to the Electoral College and the election-related aspects of the Constitution, or at least that's what the Democrats seem to be revving up for November.
Right.
So if anybody has a chance and are as looking forward to doing an homage to the Constitution, maybe those sections of the Constitution be well worth glancing at to get prepped for what the antics might be ahead in November.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question they want to go after the Electoral College, and they want to go after a few states as well. They want to add some states, which I think would be very problematic, not adding states. We've done that before, but the intention for adding states, I think, would be very problematic. So that's the Constitution. On this day, Anne Bancroft was born. Most people associate her, of course, with Mrs. Robinson in the movie The Graduate. My favorite Anne Bancroft is actually in the movie Young Winston as Winston Churchill's mother. That's my favorite role, my favorite part of her career. So do you have any favorites from Anne Bancroft, Leslie?
Well, yeah, she was always a striking woman, and she definitely would become whatever part she played. And they really just don't make them like that anymore. So, grateful for a little reflection. And as I was mulling it over, there were two movies that just struck me in her entire videography that, you know, hit me. One was The Turning Point, and that was the movie about the ballet dancers, and she really just became just a pure prima ballerina, and you could just, you know, feel her empathy as she's trying to, you know, take care of the young lady she was mentoring. And then also The Elephant Man with John Hurt as a sympathetic character who is trying to bring the stricken elephant man, who's played by John Hurt, into British society at the time. And both of those were, it was really engrossing. So, and a delight to watch.
Uh-oh. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that I had muted myself. So it wasn't you, it was me.
Sorry.
I apologize. No, no, yeah, I know. No, 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 I know you couldn't hear me, and I'm sitting there saying, what did I do? And then I checked the button. I realized I had muted myself. Sometimes I mute myself when the other person is speaking just to for the sound quality. But anyway, lots of movies that she made and a ton of them. We could do an entire show about her. But clearly, at least my favorite was the Winston Churchill movie. I just think that was the best. Well, why don't we get started? What, as I mentioned in the introduction, you write for Legal Insurrection, and it's one of our favorite websites. So just give us a little update on some of the stuff that you've been writing lately, and we'll go from that into the political conversation, Leslie.
Well, there is so much to choose from, but let me start by hitting the Facebook and my issues with Facebook and related issues. We're setting up for the election. It is very apparent that the social media giants are putting their fingers on the scale, and it is so blatant that I think it's important to review some things that have actually hit me. One of them involves the wildfires. For those of you who are aware, I write for Legal Insurrection, and I have been writing about the wildfires in California for several years. And in fact, one of my posts was actually covering a wildfire as I was stopped on a highway trying to get back to my home. So I have had some up close and personal experience with the wildfires. And the essence of it is that there were no significant wildfires impacting the state until the early 2000s. And that was after decades of letting our forests go wild. And there was an homage to old growth forests. And all of these sensible forest management plans were laid waste and sacrificed on the altar of global warming and climate science modeling. Well, as we're now aware with coronavirus modeling, modeling's only as good as the data you get in. And as the politicians came in and they made their green justice policies, we've had all these very challenging wildfires because now there's a lot of fuel to feed those fires because of poor land management practices. And earlier on, when people might have been more forgiving and assumed it was global warming, now people aren't buying it, especially as there are pictures of arsonists captured in the process of actually starting wildfires that are slowly making their way into the social media stream. So my more recent posts have covered the context of the wildfires throughout the West. And one of the things I did was summarize the number of arson cases that were occurring in Oregon, Washington, and California. Real arson cases from real news sources that were verified, pictures posted, names given, arrests made, summarized this. And then my post got a flag by Facebook for false information. Why? Because apparently arson, magically global warming creates Molotov cocktails and lights matches. So apparently global warming causes arson. And so my post got hidden under that false flag, despite the fact that I made no mention of global warming. I was simply listing off the number of arson cases that were going on. So that brings me to my next topic. As you know, I've been covering coronavirus also for...
Before we get to Corona, though, we get to that topic, and let me just ask you a follow-up on this whole question of the fires, because... you know, we've kind of grown accustomed to, I think that was a famous song from the My Fair Lady, I've grown accustomed to your face. Well, in this case, we've grown accustomed to immediately everybody jumps to the climate change explanation. And it's always climate change. It's always climate change. And yet, you know, I find it interesting. Monica Showalter wrote an article about this recently. There's no fire in Mexico, which is not that far. And they also have a lot of forest down there. And that's because they do a better job of managing the grounds than they do in California. So they're always jumping at climate change. And I just don't think, I mean, after a while, it's like the boy who cries wolf, you know, tell me something new. Just don't always jump to climate change, Leslie.
Yes, I mean, again, the climate, quote unquote, is always changing. And California is basically a desert for a large section of it. And part of the contributing factor here is that we've built on top of, you know, this environment. And we've also, the state, because of choices it's made, has not created a robust water infrastructure. In other words, our infrastructure systems to support water and making things a little less fire risk, you know, intense, have also been gutted along with, you know, the policies that force our energy companies, instead of spending money and time to invest in fire safety equipment and fire safety protocol, have been forced to develop green energy policies and support green energy technologies. So there have been a lot of bad choices made, and now decades after those choices began being made, we're now seeing these historic fires that basically are tearing apart communities, and they've traveled further north subsequently. But one can't also wonder about the number of arsons in these particular cases, especially those centered around cities like Portland, which have been a hotbed of Black Lives Matter, Antifa activities, where they have not hesitated to use fireworks and Molotov cocktails to ignite fires of stores. And they wanted to bring their chaos to the suburbs. Well, this could be a very effective way to do it. So it's not stupid, and it's not, you know, being, you know, a climate denialist to begin wondering how much of these arsons are being started and who are they starting them. It's quite fair to question these motives, especially since I will point out the year started with a massive wildfires in Australia, 24 of which were the result of arson that resulted in arrests. And
yeah,
these were climate activists trying to create a climate change narrative. And since the climate was not cooperating with them, they decided to create that narrative on their own. And if you can't question this, if you suppress that news, you're putting people's lives in danger. And that's where we got to start really getting, I think we really need to start getting serious about allowing our platforms, our tech giants, dictate what kind of conversation that can be had, because we aren't getting the important questions answered, and we're not allowing people to get the data they need to do things like maybe create neighborhood watches to look for people who might ignite those fires, or to be curious about people in their areas who are suspicious behaving. We need to protect ourselves, and we can't do that if we're being denied vital information.
No, you're exactly right. And that's the part that bothers me, that, you know, they say climate change and you say, well, I need more information. So the first thing they do is they call you a climate denier, or you don't believe in science. I said, no, that's not the point. I just need more information and you're not giving it to me. And so anyway, you're exactly right. We have to have a conversation about this, but it's kind of hard to have it if every time, you know, somebody says climate change and you say, well, no, not really. And then they immediately start saying, well, you know, we need to listen to science. Well, okay, we need to listen to science. Yeah, of course. But, you know, we also need to listen to people who know what the heck they're talking about. That is also very important. So anyway, I just wanted to say that before we jump to Corona. So take it away, Leslie. Corona.
Well, and again, the reason I'm tying this together is that everybody knows I've been following the coronavirus saga since early January, being among the first to note the disease that was spreading, apparently initially reported from a Wuhan seafood market. And of course, as I've gone on and explored and researched, more and more data seems to point to the Wuhan Institute of Virology being the source. And that took me to Tucker Carlson's latest broadcast, where he had a Dr. Li Mingyan, a credentialed virologist who has extensive experience in coronaviruses and their related vaccines, who has degrees from Chinese institutes and was involved in, and worked, obviously, with Chinese virologists. And she is slowly releasing data about her suspicions and the actual science behind how this coronavirus appears to be manufactured. And she recently published basically a 26-page recipe. Here's the section of the coronavirus. Here's how it could be created. Here's the section of the coronavirus. Here's what it could do, and here's how it could be created. It's a highly technical paper, difficult to peer review unless you happen to be extensively in that. I've read the paper. The science seems reasonable. But again, you know, you need to have access to the information. Well, Tucker Carlson went on to do an initial interview with her where she indicated that not only was the a virus from that institute, but it was manufactured. And not only was it manufactured, Dr. Yan insisted that it was intentionally released as a bioweapon, which shocked Tucker. So Tucker, being a Fox News Channel host, posted the video, again, so people could make their own decisions about who and what was going on. And again, the Facebook and Instagram flagged that post and are hiding it. And not only that, YouTube has apparently taken a video off, so we're scrambling to find another video. And then Twitter suspended Dr. Yan's account. And again, this prohibits a very serious discussion about the nature and origin of that virus, and also prohibits a very serious discussion about our relationship with China. And then Tucker Carlson did another fact check of the fact checkers, and he went and looked at what they're claiming as using fact check for false information, which was a screen they used to hide his video, and apparently none of it was directed at Dr. Yan's work, totally didn't address it because it was done months before. And one of the fact checkers was pointed toward the vaccine issue. Well, Dr. Yan had not mentioned the vaccine. So the fact checkers were just whatever they were scrambling to hide and smokescreen the fact. We have a very well-credentialed person countering all the Chinese propaganda that we've been exposed to since the very start of this pandemic. And again, I think it's great that we have resources like Canto Talk and Legal Insurrection, not to say that we can opine on the science behind the virology, but at least making people fully informed of what might be going on instead of deciding, like a platform, you don't need to see it. So our independent voices are becoming much more critical, especially over the next couple of weeks.
No, you're right. And this is something that troubles a lot of us, that I think what we need to be having is more debate. I mean, if you disagree with somebody, let me know how we disagree. Let's have a debate. But don't shut me down just because you disagree with me. And that's unfortunately what's happening in a lot of the social media. And that's why, you know, didn't something like that happen to Professor Jacobson too at the university he was teaching?
Oh, absolutely. He was attacked, and they tried to fire him or prohibit students from attending his classes based on very factual information he provided about Black Lives Matter. And he cited their website, he cited their videos, he had the information to back it up. It wasn't like he just made this out of whole cloth and extracted things out of the air and slapped it together. There was a lot of research. And so he was challenging Black Lives Matter for being the Marxist capitalist organization that is probably about the most racist entity I've ever been exposed to. And he shined a light on it, and they tried to get him fired and tried to get his classes canceled. And all it's done, and I think that that's probably the best news that is coming out of it. What it's done is I think people have hit their personal limits on all the antics. And he is united with Judicial Watch, to help other professor like UCF professor Charles Nagy fight back some of the cancel culture that that particular professor is experiencing, basically because he challenged the idea of white privilege versus what he considered black privilege, and he gave very specific mm-hmm. examples of black privilege being real. Well, that's not wrong. It's just, you know, that we can have a discussion about
right.
that and its merits, but that does not mean that his job should have been taken. So what it's done, it's a little fire under a lot of independent people, and more
right.
and more students are challenging, more and more, you know, professors are beginning to fight back because people have hit hard limits of the inanity that they are, the media and the Democrats are putting out there. And
right.
because you are a Latino, I will give you another example of pushback on a news story that was developing before my eyes this morning. So,
well, go right ahead. Why don't you go ahead and
bring
I
will
in.
Absolutely. Here we have a CBS broadcast.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we do this? Let me take a break, and then that way we'll
okay.
have a whole segment to do this, and then we'll come back and you can fill me in on that
absolutely,
that story. So we're gonna
we're
gonna take a little break, and we'll be back with Leslie right after this. This is Silvio Canto. We're chatting today with our friend Leslie Eastman. Leslie, of course, with Legal Insurrection and a great friend of our show. And we've been talking a little bit about this cancel culture. And one of the things that I continue to say is we need to talk in this country. We need different people with different ideas need to talk. But just, you know, unfortunately, they just want to shut you down. If you disagree, they just want to put you out of business. And that's not a healthy situation. It certainly doesn't create communication, which is what we need more of. Now let's get back to Leslie. Leslie, take it away and tell me about this story.
All right. So there are a number of different people I follow, and one of them is and we maybe have him on someday, is a former Navy SEAL, former FBI agent. He has his own podcast, is a speaker. His name is Jonathan T. Gilliam. And he, on Monday, was at a Latino for Trump rally in Arizona. And he has a picture, and he was very happy there, and a lot of enthusiastic people, all excited about the candidate. And it's a classic Trump rally. But later on in the week, CBS filed a news story that claimed it was a Joe Biden rally in Florida. And so this is making its way through the internet today. And I think it's a really good example for your listeners
mm-hmm.
to see the kind of antics our media is portraying in the general election cycle, and that they really have to do their own research and have to get involved and have to be very skeptical about any anti-Trump claim that is being made. You may not like Trump, you may not like his speech, you may not like, and that's fine. But you cannot take a Trump rally and convert it into a Biden rally, because plainly, Biden rallies, there, I have seen so much evidence of more Trump supporters showing up for Biden rallies Biden supporters.
Right.
Very consistent.
Yeah, well, Biden isn't doing that many rallies to begin with, because unfortunately, and I don't say this in any negative way, I mean, he's not really able to speak for a long time, which is kind of sad that he's actually running for president in that condition. But Leslie, one of the things about 2020 that frustrates me, and I think it frustrates a lot of people, is the media and how, you know, the media seems to be really carrying the water of the Democrat Party here. And I'll just give you two recent examples. The Atlantic story that came out, Atlantic magazine story that came out a couple of weeks ago, the story has pretty much fizzled out, as you know, because, you know, they cannot produce a single source that will publicly admit that Trump said what he said. On the other hand, there's like 21 people who are willing to contradict the story. And then, of course, the Bob Woodward book. Well, that interview that he had with President Trump was in February. And back in February, I don't remember a lot of people talking about the virus. And there were lots of conflicts in the science community back then about the virus. And so for Trump in February to say, look, I want to keep things calmed down, it's completely sensible given the context, that's an important word, context of where we were in February, Leslie.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But you can see that they're desperate now for anything that can hurt Trump. And it's going to be – but I think you'll notice how quickly both of those stories fizzled, because people now are tuning it out. And I strongly suspect we will not really understand the level of Trump support until November 3rd. I think people are done. Many people are done. And if they're supporting Trump, they also know that the media is a problem. So they're not engaging the media anymore. In other words, you can't believe the polls because Trump supporters don't want to participate in the polls. They have a desire to participate in the polls. And in fact, they want to see egg on the media's face. So they have motivation not to participate in the polls. There are a number of independent organizations, independent websites now that have replaced the Drudge Report that went anti-Trump. And those include one I like a lot, Rantingly, Citizen Free Press, and Just the News. And those are my top three picks. And people are becoming more aware of alternative news media and sources, because we're now having to flee Twitter and Facebook and Instagram,
right,
as platforms for information, because those are highly unreliable. And we're going back to well-known, well-respected websites that actually ask the hard questions and aren't willing to say we're wrong or right, you know, but keeping people reasonably well-informed with the current events, and
right,
including, of course, legal insurrection. So
no,
you know,
legal
people,
insurrection. I mean,
yeah,
there's legal insurrection, American Thinker, Power Line. Now, I happen to write at American Thinker, but, I mean, I'm one of a dozen who write there. And there's lots of other places that you can go, but you're exactly right. I mean, if you look at the ratings for television, I mean, look at the ratings for CNN. I mean, they're barely making 1 million viewers an hour. We're a country of 330 million people, and about 1 million an hour are watching a network. Well, that tells me that's not a national network, Leslie. A lot of people are tuning it out. You know, I don't watch it because I just think a lot of it's garbage, Leslie.
Yeah, I got to say, I have my news. I get it from a couple of trusted podcasts, American Thinker, Tammy Bruce, of course, the work we do at Legal Insurrection, Instapundit. You know, I have my sources, a few on Twitter that are reliable in the data they retrieve, but, you know, I do not pay much attention to I certainly don't trust podcast news, and I certainly have a limited number of Fox News hosts, Tucker Carlson being chief among them, I will listen to. And I find that data is much more reliable than the real just prepackaged garbage than propaganda that passes for news and in most other places.
Right. No, I think you're exactly right. And I think a lot of people, I mean, I'm getting frustrated with Facebook. I mean, I basically have reduced Facebook to just sharing information with friends. And you know, personal information.
Yeah, I love the picture of your grandbaby. I love
Oh, yeah.
Picture
I mean,
your
our good old, the good old Lincoln. Yeah, isn't that a great name for a baby,
mm-hmm.
Lincoln?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a great
mm-hmm.
name? Yeah, we love Lincoln, too. And I like that. And, yes, I do have the other page that subscribers can go to. But overall, I think Facebook is failing the country because they're being very unfair in what they put. If you say something critical about Trump, they let you do it. If you say something that is praising Trump, they immediately want to find ways of getting you off the page. And I think that's bad for Facebook. I really do, because a lot of people like me, I mean, I'm just about ready to pull the plug on it. But then I have a lot of friends in Facebook that I say, well, a lot of people want to see pictures of my grandson, for example. Well, let me stay on there just so that they can see it. That kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, I think I've made pretty much the same decision. I have a couple pages where mm-hmm. I will do the political stuff. And basically Facebook is for friends, cat
yeah.
pictures, funny Star Trek memes, you know. And that sort of thing. So, you know, but it hasn't stopped me from getting involved, and it hasn't stopped me from getting my message out. I use alternative routes and think,
that's right.
Right. You know, I got a few friends out there like InstaPundit who will link to my work, and you like
right.
will have me a guest on. We will get the information out, and I think on November 3rd, I would like to see it making the difference because
I agree.
I think,
by the way, InstaPundit, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I have to put a plug in for InstaPundit. That is a great website.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I check that every day. They're just absolutely great, the stuff that they cover. So, you know, there's lots of stuff like that out there. And I see more and more people checking them. But I've gotten to the point that if somebody puts – at one time I used to argue with people in Facebook politics. If they would put something negative, I would reply right now. Anything negative about Trump, I just completely overlook it, even if it's
yeah,
coming
I,
from
I,
friends. I just let it go,
absolutely.
And I say, you know what? I'm not going to waste my time arguing because it's not a discussion. It just becomes I am right, you are wrong, and I honestly, I'd rather talk to you on the air, and I'd rather listen to other stuff, and I'd rather read Legal Insurrection than waste my time arguing with people who hate Trump, and that's all that it is. They just hate Trump. They don't really have a logical reason. It's just, I hate the guy. Well, that's okay. If you hate the guy, go ahead and keep hating him. But, you know, I got better things to do with my life, Leslie.
Yeah, I think many of us have reached the exact same conclusion. You know, it's gotten to the point where I get a negative comment. It's not so much you can disagree or there might be a factual thing I miss. Okay, that's fine. But, you know, insulting me, insulting Trump instantly will get you blocked, and I'm done. Because
that's right.
you're arguing against emotion, and you can't argue people out of their emotions. Their emotions are
well,
their emotions.
You're exactly right. You're basically arguing with people, and they're not open-minded. They're not going to listen to anything you're saying. I mean, I'll listen to people that I disagree with. I'm open-minded. I'll talk to people. But, you know, but you reach a point where you realize they're not really interested in having a discussion. They just want to bash Trump. Well, I have
mm-hmm.
better things to do with my life. Well, let's go to another topic, Leslie. What else you got there on your agenda?
Well, you know, since we're on the subject of the general election and Trump, why not discuss the achievement this week that the media is pretty much ignoring, peace in the Middle East, with the agreement between the UAE, Israel, and Bahrain that looks like there are going to be even more joiners in the near future. And let me go back to the time when Trump moved the capital from moved the embassy to Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
and that was supposed to cause massive war and chaos. And here we have peace breaking out in the Middle East. And then the next day, our press secretary, Kylie McEnany, comes out, and she realizes that she has not received one question about that historic agreement. And so she gives the alert, chewing out, for their lack of interest in this agreement, which is historic by any stretch of the imagination. Plus, as an extra bonus, Trump has received two Nobel Peace Prize nominations.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And this is what bugs the heck out of me. I mean, you can dislike Trump all you want, but you have to recognize that these agreements are historic. I mean, look, when President Carter was in the White House, I didn't like him, but I had to give him credit on the Egypt-Israel agreement back in 78. And when these things happen that are good for the country, you got to take off your partisan hat for just a minute and say, well done. And clearly, there's three agreements, actually, that were done in the last couple of weeks. And why he doesn't get any credit, why he doesn't get any questions, he's getting questions about the Bob Woodward book, but he's not getting questions about the agreement. Well, that tells me that some people in the media are not being very honest, Leslie. That's all I can say. If they're wondering why there's so much distrust in the media, well, they should watch themselves on television, Leslie.
It's you know, like I said, I was trained by my father, who is a Pulitzer Prize winner, to do journalism, and I just get so embarrassed. You know, I could get a press pass and ask 5 or 10 more meaningful questions than the regurgitated Washington, D.C., New York Beltway blather that emanates from these people on a regular basis. And what I love about our press secretary, she comes in with a binder full of facts and uses it as a mighty weapon against the press. And I enjoy seeing her, you know, take them down each and every day. And they get angry and angrier when that happens. And then they do things like, you know, show us Biden, show us Trump for, you know, Latinos for Biden, you know, Latinos for Biden, and say, and hey, that's a picture taken for Latinos from Trump. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, and the disparity in the coverage could not be more dramatic. And,
absolutely.
You know, yeah, and it's now seeping from the highly engaged people like you down into people who aren't normally following politics. Americans, for the most part, like people who play fairly. And if you don't mm-hmm. play fairly, then that really reverberates with most Americans who'll be voting on November 3rd.
I agree with you. And I think that another example of this is the coverage of these so-called peaceful protesters. I mean, give me a break. You're watching a city burn. You're watching people throw bricks at the police. How many policemen have been injured over the last few months, and yet they're talking about peaceful protests? Well, no. You can see on television that these are not peaceful. And so, you know, it just amazes me. You know, my late father had a line, and he would always say something along the lines is, don't lose your integrity because you hate someone. In other words, don't do something stupid just because you hate somebody. And I think that's kind of what my advice to the media would be. You know, don't do something stupid just because you hate Trump. If you don't like Trump, that's fine. It's okay to hate Trump. But don't lose your integrity, don't lose your reputation because you hate somebody. And that's what I think is happening to many of these reporters, Leslie.
Oh, absolutely. They have decided, and I think they gave themselves permission to do this during the 2016 campaign. In fact, I think I read an editorial where they gave themselves permission to do advocacy journalism and opinion journalism because Trump was such a danger to the country. And as a result, our cities are in flames. Our police are being targeted, you know, lies are put out as facts on a regular basis. And that is not good for anybody, especially those, you know, who love our country and want it to prosper.
Absolutely. And especially the men and women who put on that uniform every day, who go out to protect us, they deserve to be treated with a lot more respect than what they're getting from the media. I hate what's happening in many of these cities, and I hate the way the media is covering. But you know, Leslie, all of this just gives us the material to get ready for the next show. So I hope that you will think about a topic here soon and come back to us many times before November. Before November is a good thing.
Yeah, we'll schedule a few more shows, like once every 2 weeks, and certainly on election week, we'll get some coverage in. So I'll just look for the emails, and we'll definitely hit whatever. And I'm sure there's going to be a whole lot of more news between now and the next time I talk with you. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
Keep the pictures and Lincoln coming. Give your wife a squeeze for me. And I hope everybody has a great and fire-free rest of their September.
Absolutely. And we're counting on you to come back because we always enjoy that. And my best to your family, to Blake. How's he doing? Give me a quick report on Blake.
Oh, he is really loving the Academy. It's been really great for him. He's doing super well. He is taking Chinese. And is considering maybe a minor in Chinese now. He's enjoying the language that much. I wonder why they were having him take Chinese. Scratch my head about that one. Mom's got a big old care package of snacks headed his way on Monday.
Okay. All right. Well, give our best to him and tell him we wish him the very best in his career, which I'm sure the career is going to be absolutely wonderful when he finishes. Thank you for joining us, Leslie, and I'm really looking forward to our next one.
Me too, Silvio. All right, bye.
Thank you so much. Our friend Leslie Eastman. Leslie, of course, a contributor to Legal Insurrection, and many, many, many times we have had her on the show and talk with her about lots of things. In fact, I think it was 8 years ago that we had Leslie on the show back in 2012, and we've done quite a few shows over time. And especially since she's been writing over at Legal Insurrection, it's just been an absolutely wonderful thing to have her on the show. We'll have her on a few more times to talk about everything going on with this election. But I just want to reiterate what I said about the media. The media is not coming across very balanced these days. And if they don't realize it, they ought to read the polling data about the media that is out there. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.